Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Touchline Podcast. We're doing episode 18 today. This is Nick Raimondo episode. You got me, I'm Rich, joined with Brett.
Scott.
We have a special, very special guest with us. For this episode, we have Ian Joy, who does a play-by-play for NYCFC.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good to be on with you.
Yeah, exciting. When Brett told me that you had agreed to do this, I was just super excited. Couldn't wait for us to record the episode. So
nice.
Enjoyed having you on the team, and I've enjoyed following you in 2008, right? A little bit afterwards, along with I guess you had a lot of other stops around Europe and whatnot. Did you have a favorite stop, in Germany or any other?
Yeah, I think the most favorite place that I played in Europe was Italy, obviously. I spent the majority, or at least the longest time, here at that one football club, and 5 years of my life in Germany altogether. So it was close to 3 years that I spent there, very, very successful year there. And obviously with the success that you have, it's a nice memory to fall back on. So the club itself is a little bit different because it's a political club and very open club, especially in Germany. They try to fight against discrimination, racism, homophobia, things like that. So for me, it was a club that was close to my heart for more reasons than just the on-field football.
I thought it was interesting. I didn't know that you were born in the States here in San Diego. I just assumed that you were born in Scotland because you have such an awesome Scottish accent.
San Diego, California, and my father played in the NASL at the time, and we moved to Scotland when I was just short of my third birthday. So went to school in Scotland. Immediately left when I was 15 years old to go play pro down at Tranmere Rovers. So I was in Scotland for just about 12 years and picked up the accent, and the accent really hasn't left me since. It's been crazy because I'm home longer than I ever was in Scotland, but my parents still live there, my sister still live there, and my daughter now lives there as well. So having the Scottish accent's been a good thing for me, obviously, since I've retired and gone into television and media. It's nice to have the accent, but I'm certainly very proud to have been born in the United States.
When you go back home, do they make fun of you, like that you don't sound Scottish?
Well, it's not a good thing to go into a pub in Scotland and start talking with my accent, because they accuse you of being an American Yank, and you could be close when I go back for a few pints.
I got a question.
Yeah.
You hear a lot about these international guys coming over here, and they're about how huge the country is, not used to the whole travel and everything like that. When you came over for RSL, was that an issue for you also?
Not really. I was fortunate to be traveling since I was about 15, 16 years old with the U.S. youth national team system. I played for the U-70s, 23s, and we had the opportunity to travel all across the world, and traveling to the States so frequently just became habit. So I was already used to traveling in the United States and across Europe over here. So my body clock was used to the travel. It still is. I never get tired of it. I enjoy the travel, but it doesn't really affect. I have seen some players really get affected by it. When Kenny Duker came over at the same time as me, he took a little bit of time to get used to. It really affected his legs quite a little bit as well. So some players get used to it a lot quicker than others. It's really struggle because they're not used to traveling so far and sitting so long on an airplane or a bus or whatever it may be. European players travel one or two hours on a bus or a plane in their own country, and that's it. But here in the United States, sometimes, obviously, from west to east coast or east to west, you're sitting 4, 5, 6 hours on an air, and it can take its toll on your legs and your body.
You're going, stadiums that are exact same altitudes, you're dealing with all that.
It took some time. When I first moved to Utah in 2008, I started to have nosebleeds, and I really had some issues just breathing, getting used to the lack of air, or at least the oxygen at that altitude. But once you get used to it, your fitness levels just go through the roof. And when you train at high intensity like we did with Jason there, it was incredible. The guys were so fit. And eventually we knew we were going to start winning games because the team is so fit. But that altitude training is pretty awesome.
Right. Teams in Europe, like England and whatnot, complain about Europa League or Champions League or whatever, you know, having to take a few-hour plane ride to some other country. And I'm like, that's a short trip between MLS teams. So
I remember sitting on Pauli, and they were in the north to the eastern part of Germany, and we played against Dresden and Aue, teams like that, and they're pretty much on the border to Poland. And sometimes you can sit on the bus for 6 or 7 hours, like luxury traveling. You're lying on a bed, you've got your own space, you have internet, television, whatever, you're on your sofa for about 6 hours. So it's a little bit different from traveling in Europe here. The guys who come over to Major League Soccer, and they stick with the team. I've obviously heard stories about DP players coming over to Major League Soccer and sitting in first class. And when I see David Villa in New York City sitting in front of me, this guy's won the World Cup, and you can tell that's incredible to see.
That's awesome.
Yeah. How you got your gig with BN Sport?
It's quite an interesting story. Once I retired from soccer with Portland Timbers, I decided to step away from the game for a little while and do a few business adventures with a friend that I'd met in Utah, and really enjoyed doing that. It took my mind off soccer and get back into it, whether it would be coaching or whether it would be radio, TV, some sort of media. And then RSL reached out to me to do a game against LA, which I did do in the absence of Dunny. It was so much fun. I knew there was a need out there for me to go on and do something similar. And the story was pretty crazy. I'm sure you all remember Bobby Ryan from FC Dallas. He died very early. He was only 34 when he passed away, surprisingly. He had only just retired, and he was working for FC Dallas TV. And they were looking for someone to replace him in an emergency situation. And, of course, they turned to Jeff Kassar and Jason Kreiss for any advice as to people who could step into that role for the firm, and they both recognized. So I went to FC Dallas, and I did 8 games there for them in Major League Soccer. And Struggent, who's a very good friend of mine now, Mr. Steve Kashani, he lives out in California. He's a Scotsman living in the United States. And he represents a lot of TV media personalities across the world. And he asked if I would be interested in working full-time in television, if you could find me the right job. But they really wanted me there. Then I don't see any reason why not. And within 3 weeks, he had an offer from BN Sports that were just beginning. So that's how the whole journey started. And I can't believe it's been 3 years since I've been at BN Sports. Now it's flown by very quickly.
When I saw you, show up on BN Sport, you know, watching Madrid or Barcelona or PSG or whoever they're showing, oh my gosh, you know, there's Ian, you know, and it's always good to hear your voice on, whether it's calling games or in the studio or so.
Thank you. It's nice to do it. It's a fun job because, you know, players retire and they go on to do different things, and you never quite know what you're going to do when you do retire from soccer. Obviously, some education. I went straight into soccer when I was 15. Football was my life. I learned a new language. I got my coach going to be the way for me to go. And once I got the opportunity in television, I knew that's what my destiny was. And always been an entertainer in the dressing room for the guys, field, for fans in general, just having fun. Knew I had a personality in front of the camera. So it's been perfect for me. It's a perfect fit, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. I guess NYCFC, they decided, since they had, you know, half the team was from RSL already, they decided to pull you in to do the play-by-play for them as well.
I'm sure a lot of personalities were after that job because it was in New York City. It was for a new franchise. It was for the YES Network, which is obviously very high profile as a regional network all the way around the United States. So there was a lot of people who were after the job, and I actually asked Jason whether or not it would be a good idea for me to contemplate doing that job as well. And asked pretty much, should I throw my name in the hat? They said, absolutely. And throughout a 3 or 4 month process, my name was the one that got picked out of the hat, and we struck a deal, and it's been perfect for me, Mark, to do these gigs. And obviously it's been difficult with the team not winning many games, but it's been a terrific experience for me. It's an incredibly professionally run football club. Working closely with Jason again, obviously Ned and Wingsy are both very close friends of mine, so to get to work with those guys again has been very cool. But also the YES Network has just blown me away with how professional they are. The people who work for the organization treated me, so it's an opportunity I simply could not turn down, and I'm glad I took it.
Had, knowing Jason prior to going into this, did that kind of help you out or the style of player he might want or be looking for?
I think so. Obviously, I was a part of the two put together that started some success for us and at Real Salt Lake and team. And knowing how he works behind the scenes, knowing how he trains, what type of player he wants, it certainly helps. But this is a completely different situation. There's obviously more pressure with the New York media. There's more pressure from the owners because they want success almost immediately. Jason has been fantastic since he's been there. So it's helped me knowing Jason and some of the guys, but you really don't. It's just so brand new. Yes, you know all the players because they've been picked from different teams around Major League Soccer, but most of those players were not in the first 11 from their respective clubs. Outside of maybe Ned and Wingsy and one or two others, the rest of them were bench players for the club. So it's taken some time for Jason to get some success with the club. It's still not. They're young, they're hungry, and obviously when you've got Jason Christ on the sidelines, you've always got a great opportunity of being successful.
Maybe I'll start with this question. So do you think that the, you know, Citigroup or the, you know, the people in charge, do you think, you know, being in New York, you know, that seem to be, you know, the extra pressure of winning and, you know, kind of impatience in sports in general, and obviously with an expansion club, you know, it takes time, so.
Yeah, that everybody's asking the question that you just asked, you know, how much time will Jason get? And it's simply being asked because they've not got off to a winning start. They've got off to a sloppy start, losing games in a row, and only having won the one game is very unfortunate. They should have won games. But the question is not easy to answer because you just don't know what the Citigroup is thinking. Obviously, they want success. We see what happens in Manchester with City. Immediately, success is a must. Otherwise, you lose your job. But I don't get the feeling from what I've seen within the club already. There's a certain patience. They know that this is going to take some time. Jason would not have accepted this job if he thought he was going to get fired after 1 year. Jason would have had a plan, and that would have been a 2 or 3 year plan to get this club to be challenging for the title. And I don't see it being any different. It's going to take time. I mean, they're only in their first 6 months as a football club having players. So now you've got to try and build on it. You've got to try and get better. You've got to try and start putting 3 points on the board. And how you do that, sometimes you just need a little bit of luck along the way. But I really don't think that Jason's under too much pressure. Forget about the media. A lot of the media and personalities in U.S. soccer will always try to put the pressure on someone like Jason. There's not much pressure there unless he's putting pressure on himself.
You know, at one time, right before Klinsmann was hired, there was rumors talking about how Jason Christ was in consideration for a national team job for the United States. Do you think he could have?
We asked him the question why he took the job, because he passed up on many opportunities as a player that he should or wished later in time that he would have taken. Now as a manager, as a coach, as a head coach, he's wanting to take this opportunity because it might never come around again. That makes me believe that the U.S. national team job was probably not offered to Jason, otherwise I'm pretty sure he would have taken it. But also, whether or not he would be successful is difficult to tell, because Klinsmann has a group of players that are very hungry, they're young, they want to do well, but it's not a talented bunch of players, we have to be honest. The United States lacks quality, it lacks special talent, but they're not far away because they have. And it will get you quite far in tournaments. You need some luck along the way, which Jason potentially could have had. Klinsmann didn't really get a World Cup last year. But the US is not far away. If you find one or two really good quality players who are magical, they can be a great nation.
And then, you know, people talked about Craig's team job sometime in the future, but, you know, I'm excited to see what he does with NYCFC because, you know, at RSL, you know, he always stuck with the Diamond and, you know, he had the same kind of consistent players and whatnot. And I think this is giving him a new challenge. It's important with a, you know, national teams, you know, where you're always thrust players and different, you know, formation preferences, and then you play against teams from all over the world that have different playing styles. You know, I think it's good for him to get additional experience in you know, these different situations that he's got.
If you don't test yourself with another football club, you never really initially are. So to take the opportunity to go to New York, which is a high-pressure job because of the media more than anything else, you know you're going to come under a great deal of scrutiny. And Jason wanted to test himself. I'm not sure what happened behind the scenes. Obviously, there's been some differences with Dave Checkett's football club and Deloitte coming in. I'm not sure if they got on with each other. I don't know the story behind it, but I just know that Jason was very hungry to try something new, and I think he stepped into something pretty special. But for Waste, I can say that because I think that they, if they miss out on the playoffs, it's not such a big deal. But next year, there has to be some success.
Outside of just, you know, being a young team, kind of trying to find its identity, what other issues do you think this New York team has?
Issues. I mean, trying to put points on the board is not easy in Major League Soccer anyway. Trying with is even more difficult. Trying to get a unit together, create a team with players who are not necessarily the best in Major League Soccer is more difficult. So it's an uphill task before you even get on the training field. The group of players that Jason selected are technically footballers individually, but can they be a good team? There's two or three players on that squad of players who have come over to New York City and probably maybe been a bit big time. Maybe come into New York thinking that they're the man. They've come into this big franchise. They've got David Villa. They're signing Frank Lampard. They live in New York City. They train with the football club and maybe lost their concentration a little bit and spending too much time enjoying social media and whatever media publications they're getting themselves. So a lot on individual jobs. Seeing right now in the first 11 will probably not be there for very long. If their performances don't improve, they'll be out the door. And Jason's like that. He's a winner. He doesn't accept anything less than people being successful. So there's five or six players, you'll see it this weekend as well, who are very, very good, very talented, and can win you a game. But there's players on there who are on the board between in the door and staying there for a long time and also being shown in the door by Jason if they're not good enough going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, I mean, New York, kind of like a lot of teams, you know, it seems like you guys have struggled a little bit with different injuries and whatnot. But, you know, it's, I guess, forward core, at least the starting, you know, David Villa and Nemec, is that his name?
Yeah.
You know, they seem to have, you know, some good potential, and then obviously David Villa has good potential, but, you know, the midfielder group, they seem to be pretty solid, the starting group, and it's just the defenders, you know, it's kind of where maybe in the summer transfer window, maybe Jason would need to address primarily. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
I think you're right. When you look at the attack line, you've got David Villa there as someone that you can rely on to score goals if chances are being created. He's been a little frustrated. Obviously, injury hasn't helped him either. He got off to a flying start and scored a couple of goals, which is nice for him and his confidence. Then you get injured and immediately you're fighting or at least running an uphill battle. Nemec has not really been hit so far. He hasn't found the back of the net yet. He hasn't really merit staying in the team. And it's actually very similar to the Kenny Duker situation back in 2008. Jason signs a big guy from Europe and expected to come in and score goals, and it just didn't happen. And that's the case so far for Adam Nemec. And I actually played against Adam back in Germany. He was the same type as he is now in New York. I expected him to be successful, and he still might. but he's got to do a lot more. But they've got a lot of young players that are quite exciting. And Kyrie Shelton is one that I'm sure you're all familiar with through the youth system of the United States. He's a footballer. There was a lot of pressure at early stages for Jason to put him into the lineup. And he scored his first goal at the weekend there to get them a point. And he's a talent. This kid's a player. He's a very, very good footballer. He's very smart. He's very raw talent. And that's someone that everybody needs to look out for. Defensively, I mean, it's been very difficult. You see, Wingsy tells you a story right there. They're missing a centre-back. George John has been injured. So they're along the centre-back line alongside Jason Hernandez. Jeb Brovsky's filled in at full-back and had... I would say an average performance roles being the problem. William again, and then got injured, over from Manchester City, got suspended in his first game. So there's been a lot of battles that Jason's had to deal with, but no real consistency. If the team finds consistency, they'll start to put points on the board. Regardless of playing well or not, they will start to win games. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah, they got a lot of talented player. I love that you mentioned Shelton, because I watched, I think it was the first two or three games of their existence, and that was a kid that, even at being as young as he is, he came on, as soon as he hit the field, he made impacts. He was a lot like what we're seeing out of Jordan Allen for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a talented player. I like Allen. Allen's a very exciting player. And we need that in this country. So to see someone like this, I mean, the first time I got an opportunity to see him play was in Colorado, and it just made me stand up a little bit and notice that this kid has got something about him. And watching the game and seeing him come off the bench and make a difference in every single game that he came in, he made a difference. Opportunities to start, necessarily throwing him in at the deep end, but you know. The youngsters there will get their chance. They've got another one from Colombia, Javier Calle. He's got a beautiful left foot. Obviously, Mix Discarud is a player who's still got many years ahead. He's not yet reached his full potential in Jersey. So even the experienced players, David Villa, you can throw into that category as well. I don't think he's played good enough. You know, uncharacteristically seeing him throwing his arms off when he came off the field, that was disappointing. And that's what Jason's up against. There's a lot of characters in that dressing room successful. A lot of them are winners and they're frustrated right now, but at some stage in the season it'll just come right for them. Whether or not it'll be too late for the playoffs, that's yet to be found out.
And you know, being a young player under Jason is probably, especially here in Salt Lake, when we got a guy like Luis Gil, he didn't throw him out there immediately. He brought him along perfectly. So if you're a young guy under Christ, you have to be thankful that you're in the right situation, that he's actually going to develop you and put you in right positions.
Yeah, he players into a situation when the media puts pressure on him. Jason knows what he's doing when he wants to play them, and we've seen it so many times at RSL when good players have come in through the door, especially young players. They've had to wait patiently for an opportunity to get into the first 11. Ours, a little bit more desperation creeps in for results. But Jason didn't really feel too much pressure. He knew what he was trying to build. And once the team did become successful and consistently successful, he knew he could throw the youngsters in at any time and they would be surrounded by confident footballers.
So New York City comes into Rio Tinto this Saturday, you know, at 8 p.m. kick, Mountain Time. There's going to be a lot of familiar faces both on the sideline and on the field, I think, for fans, as I think it might be a little bit weird for the players as well to be a teammate in the wrong color jersey. See what happens when Ackerman and Grabovoi meet in a tackle for the first time. I don't know.
Did Ned go into a tackle too many times?
Well, doing the tackle. That's a tackle. That's for sure. You know, I think it'll be exciting. You know, I'm really excited to see, you know, the energy that, you know, the teams come out with. I'm not really sure what to expect from RSL, seeing how, you know, this last Saturday they really got undone in all sorts of ways. And, you know, we're still missing a lot of our, you know, the big players. You know, Morales is still going to be out. Plata and Jaime, they're doing full training, but it doesn't sound like they're going to play this weekend still. Schuler's still out. And then, you know, George Gunn, New Zealand have some question marks on, you know, both who's going to play and how are we going to play together. And our depth is really, you know, starting to come into question a little bit. Thinking, Brett, on that instead of Allen, do you think that we'll roll out the same lineup, maybe give Salcedo a start instead of Allen?
Full start. He's a lot. Allen, that first few times he started, he kind of came in and a young player, speed of the game, it still kind of hasn't slowed down to him. And so maybe a start in front of his home crowd would be the perfect situation for him to see if that game can finally slow down for him, because first time we really got to see quality minutes out of him, he got the red card and on reckless challenges. So
for Sturzer in our midfield or give Bofo a chance. I know you probably haven't watched RSL as much as you'd like to, but
no, I've seen him enough times to know, you know, at least have an opinion on what Jeff would try to do. I think in a game like this, Jeff's going to lean more to say a high temperamental player, as we've seen from his red card, but that he's an exciting player and he brings a great deal of passion, which is exactly what's probably lacking from RSL's 11. This, when you know emotions are going to be high, there's a little tension on the sidelines and in that midfield. I think you need experience, but you also need players who are really passionately looking to represent your badge. And RSL still has a lot of talented players. Again, I go back to it. I think inconsistency started to creep into the RSL team. And we've noticed it under Jeff. It's not easy for him. He's trying to replace Jason Kreis, who's had so much success at the football club. Then you see three or four really big players leaving the football club. Take Willie Johnston, Nat Borchers, Winger, Grabovoi. Yes, they're a little older, but that's your core players. You've still Beckerman, you've still got Romando, you've still got a great deal of talent in that squad, but you take out four players like that from any team, that's a core group of players. And in the dressing room, it's lacking. On the 11 on the field, I'm sure all the supporters have seen it as well. It's been lacking that little bit of something special. And it's been frustrating to watch Real Salt Lake play this year. At times, they've been outstanding, especially when Javier's been the first 11. Times it's looked like a shadow of what Real Salt Lake is all about. So it's been okay, but RSL needs to be very smart. They need to keep on winning games. This game at the weekend is going to be big for them, obviously for personal reasons against Jason. But 3 points are very important for RSL right now.
I think a team that's coming in here, like, I mean, you're going to have players from both sides that are coming in and seeing guys that they're not used to, and maybe it might get a little emotional with Christ coming back and everything like that. How well do you think player onto the field a little bit?
I think so. I think when you look at the players who represented Jason with Nick and Kyle, two players that love Jason, obviously, and did everything they possibly could to help Jason be successful. I'm sure it'll be strange seeing him before the game walking into the away visitors' dressing room. But I think that when the game starts and the whistle blows, you're going to see Chris Winger flying into tackles like you've seen him the last years. Mm-hmm. You're see Ned Grabovoi get on the ball like you've seen him over recent years. You're going to see Beckerman getting stuck into challenges. It doesn't matter if it's Chris Winger who's getting stuck into or if it's David Villa. It'll be a bit of a battle, I think. Obviously, desperation's creeping in for New York City to try and pick up points. They need points a lot more than Real Salt Lake does. There's a little personal battle, obviously, with Jason coming into the stadium where he's had so much success and he sees his number retired hanging up there. I'm sure he's going to be emotional going back to that place. But Jason's a pro. He's a pro. He knows what he's got to do. And 3 points are very important for New York City. So I think the players just go head-to-head. They forget the moment. They forget the emotions. And then they really go for the 3 points.
a lot of people hate to say, especially in soccer, is must-win game. But is this kind of one of those situations for both clubs?
I'm starting to get the feeling it's a must-win game for Jeff. I think that the fans very quickly will turn on Jeff if they don't start to see that attractive style of the team picking up points. Obviously, RSL has been spoilt over the years from very talented teams and talented players who have scored a lot of goals and played football the right way. They really have played soccer the right way. And now there's a lot of youngsters in that RSL squad. So I'm getting the feeling now, with pressure, especially what I've been hearing in the media, that Jeff needs the 3 points, and with it being a battle against Jason, probably needs it a little bit more than what Jason does. Jason's coming in there hoping to get 3 points. They've only won one game, so there's no guarantees at all that they can even manage that more than Jason, even though I'm sure Jason will be wanting to do everything he possibly can to come away with 3 points.
Jeff there when you were a player? Mm-hmm.
Jeff was a goalkeeping coach when I was there, and terrific guy, wonderful, wonderful guy.
In that season you were there, that Jeff had the potential to be a head coach?
I was surprised, actually. You know, I'm happy for him personally. He's a very good guy. Great friend of mine, obviously. Spent 18 months at RSL, some of the toughest times of my life, really. But it was great to have individuals like him around the dressing room, always making you laugh, always making you smile. For me, it's very difficult, obviously, to have a successful coach coming in who's a goalkeeper. It's first and foremost. There's not many goalkeepers who have gone into being successful coaches, especially in Major League Soccer. He knows the players inside out. But it's not easy to be able to translate what you want and change the dilemma and the way the team plays from Jason's style to Jeff's style. That takes time. But I didn't really think that Jeff would go on and be a head coach. It never really popped into my mind that Jeff would want to take up that role. I always thought Jeff was happy being Jason's second man. Jeff was very happy being a goalkeeping coach. He was obviously very close to all of the players, and at times probably too close to the players. So really surprised to see him take up this opportunity at Real Salt Lake. Obviously wish him all the best on a personal front. But I'm really intrigued to see how successful he is. And like I said, there's a lot of pressure that will come onto his shoulders very quickly if Real Salt Lake don't start winning games consistently.
And you know, Jason Christ retired partway through the season and then instantly became the head coach. Do you think there's any other players in this league that could actually pull that off right now, that just retire and all of a sudden become a head coach and take over like Jason did?
A lot of players. Obviously, experienced players are the ones that come to mind. One of my very good friends from Real Salt Lake, and everyone you're also familiar with, is Nat Borchers. For me, he is at some stage going to be a terrific coach in Major League Soccer. I really believe that he has all the attributes to being a very good head coach. He's a very smart boy. He's an absolute winner. He has the strangest face in the world with that stupid beard on it. But I tell you what, he's going to be something very special. I spent a long time being his roommate at Real Salt Lake, getting to know him as a person, what he wants to do after football, and I know he wants to be successful coaching and go on to the sidelines.
Yeah, that even to this day, he is loved by this RSL fan base. I know that's a guy that he leave them.
So. Yeah. I think he was surprised as well. I actually was in Utah with him in the off season before he had signed for Portland, and I think he was a little disappointed. He wanted to stay and finish his career in Utah and didn't feel the love in return from the club. And me, because that guy had given so much to RSL, and to see him treated like that was really disappointing. But I'm sure there is at some stage around the corner when there's an opportunity for Real Salt Lake who want to come in, then Nat Borcher's name at some point along the line will come up.
Yeah, only last question.
Oh, go ahead.
On Twitter, and you've kind of hinted at it a few times that you kind of went through a tough time here in Utah personally, and it came out later when you released an article about and through depression and everything like that, and somebody was just wondering, after that post, what was the reaction like amongst players and your support group, and how supportive was the league?
I think first and foremost, it was really unfortunate that it happened at Real Salt Lake, because we were onto something pretty special there, and I really enjoyed my time there. I really enjoyed playing for RSL, and I playing for the supporters, especially when we got into Rio Tinto. It was incredibly special playing in that stadium, and for the fans watching everybody turn out to watch the team. So first and foremost, it was difficult at times because I was injured a lot, and there was a lot of stress on my body, and I was having a lot of hamstring troubles, and I think I played 20 games in the first year, which was okay, but missed 14 or 15 games, and all of it through injury, some through suspension, but injuries was a big problem for me at that time, and getting healthy, staying healthy was a big problem. And then you have a young whippersnapper like Tony Beltran who's coming through the ranks. You knew he was going to want to play. Jason had to play him, and I knew that at times I would have to be patient to get back into the 11 with Tony playing so well at right back and Wingsy doing really no rush for me to come back, and it was good because it took the pressure off my shoulders. When I left Germany, what most people don't know is I was obviously Pauli. We'd just got promoted into the Bundesliga, and everything was great. They'd offered me a lovely new contract. But what most people don't know at that time was that I was going through a problem with my relationship with my wife. We'd just had a baby. And the real reason why I left Germany was because I wanted to play Major League Soccer so that my wife could get a job in an English-speaking country. My daughter could go to a nursery and school in an English-speaking country, and really make a change. So Garth Lagerwey came over to Germany, spent a lot of time with me, and over a few beers, he watched a game that I played against Kaiserslautern, and slept on my sofa that night and snored the whole night away. And the next day he woke up and he was so impressed with St. Pauli and what I had going on in Germany, he asked me, am I making the right decision? He asked me, why would you want to play Real Salt Lake? And it was for family reasons, and it was the only reason I left Germany. So I'd obviously signed a four-year contract with MLS, and then within a couple of months of arriving in the United States, my wife decided that she didn't want to be in the U.S. She wanted to leave and go back to Europe, so I left. And this is a story that you probably nobody knows. She left, I'm not even sure if I wrote about this in the article. She left when we played FC Dallas away in 2008. The morning, traveled to Dallas, flew back to Europe. I flew to Dallas with the team, and the guys all knew. I had told all the team in training that this was going to happen. Obviously, I was devastated, but the guys were terrific. I mean, Will Johnson, Borchers, Yuromov, Sisian, Dima Kovalenko, I mean, the names, Clint Mathis, all these guys were just best friends and supported me like I could never have ever imagined. And then, of course, I went to Dallas and got sent off after 40 minutes, and Jason just told me to leave the club and take some time away from football and get my head straightened out. Not many football clubs would ever do that. Not many coaches would ever do that. Not many players would ever understand that. Everybody's so tuned into winning games and winning win bonuses and like that, that sometimes the personal side of people is forgotten. So I was in the right place for me personally. I had so many terrific support around me when I was injured and were patient, because obviously there was a great deal of investment in me being successful at RSL. But when I wasn't on the field, I was pushing and motivating this team as best as I possibly could. So felt like I had a great part in helping change the culture at Real Salt Lake from being a losing franchise to very quickly being a successful one. And my personal happiness suffered at times because I was away from my family. I was away from my ex-wife, obviously away from my daughter. And then I met a girl from Utah who changed everything around, and football didn't really seem to matter anymore. So I'm now married to that girl from Utah, Nicole. She's from Sandy, Utah, and she really changed my life. But the real issue why I left RSL was down to injuries more than anything else. I suffered a lot with depression at that stage. But I had to leave, go back to Europe, be closer to my daughter. I had to sort my hamstrings out. I came back in 2009 to preseason after going to Fortuna Dusseldorf on trial. And Jason and Garth asked me, what do I want to do? I said, I want to try. So I went to Dusseldorf. They offered me a wonderful contract. And for some stupid reason, I left in the middle of the night from a hotel in Turkey, turned the deal down over and left to go back to preseason training camp in Utah. And one of the reasons was is because I bought into Jason Kreis, I bought into Garth Lagerwey, I bought into Dave Checketts, and I wanted RSL to be successful. So I came back and I concentrated on preseason in 2009. And I gave everything I possibly could to be successful. I was still suffering a little bit with depression, but going all 100 guns blazing to try and get the club to be really successful. Obviously, we'd reached the playoffs in 2008, and it was a reasonable success, but we wanted to win it. And I knew I was a big part of that. So I did a great preseason, and then the last season game we played against Austin, Rio Tinto, and I pulled my hamstring after two minutes in the game, and that was the end. I went through 4 months, and I pulled my hamstring 10 times in 4 months. And as you can imagine, as a player who's given everything to try and help and be successful, the injuries took a toll, and missing my daughter and everything else started to just pile on top of me. I had a fallout with Jason behind closed doors, just because I was an ass, and simply said, I'd lost my mind, and football had become second. So even though I wasn't playing, I still tried to do my best to help motivate the players to be successful, and I'm so glad that the football club really went on to be successful that year.
I was really appreciative of you sharing that story. It was a couple of years ago now, I guess, right?
And a while ago now, 6 years ago.
I remember reading that, and it's something as fans, you know, we don't, like you say, we just see you guys as players most of the time, that, you know, you go out on the field and play, and that once you walk off the field, that, there's rainbows and unicorns, right? Because you're playing soccer. And so a lot of times we forget that, you know, whether it's, you know, you're having a hard time in relationships, or, you know, depression, or, you know, someone busted into your car, or whatever it is, you know, that, you know, there's a lot of other things that go into, you know, the person rather than just playing soccer all the time. So
I'm trying to get involved in it some way in Major League Soccer. I'm sure through the union that I can help, because there's a lot of players who I've seen suffer with depression, probably more than I did. But I got to a very bad stage. I'm happy I was in Utah when I was going through that stage, because the people are super friendly. It's really clean in Utah. You know, there's not much trouble you can get into, if that makes sense. And for me, it was great, because I knew I had the mountains to escape to. I had training when I needed it. I had Clint Mathis, my drinking buddy at the time, to go through stories. And surrounded by a family atmosphere every time I went to training. And that was from Tyson Pace, who's the physiotherapist, to Dave Checketts, who was the owner, to Jason Kreis, Jeff Kassar, Robin Fraser, and then this unbelievable core of players. If you think of the names, like in 2009, the team that went on to win it, the names were incredible. But what you really don't know is behind the scenes, they were family. They were one who looked after each other. We all pretty much earned, you know, there was nobody making mass amounts of money. Obviously, Javier was the one who was making more than anybody else, but it wasn't much more. And everybody was so together. It was incredible. And it was all thanks to Jason and Garth.
That's awesome to hear.
Well, Ian, we really appreciate you staying on. I know it's really late there on the coast, and you got an early flight in the morning. We kind of went a little bit long, but
no problem.
Old RSL mates that are going to come and play against us, and we hope you have continued success both at BN Sport and with NYCFC, and we look forward to talking with you again.
No, thank you. Thanks very much for having me on. Obviously, since I've left RSL, I haven't really had much of an opportunity to say thanks to all the supporters and the fans and the great people who supported that team to success. Without the supporters, that team would not have been successful, and it was very important to have everyone get behind the team, and to see that continue, it means so much to all the players, even the ones who left. Just need to look at Chris Winger and Ned Grabovoi when they return at the weekend, see how much it meant to them when they walked onto that field. It was a great time.
I'm going to come back on anytime.
Thanks very much, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Anytime. Have a good night.
All right.
Cheers.
Bye.
Interview was amazing.
It was awesome.
I don't really know where to go from there. I mean, just because it was amazing. But yeah. Is there anything else you wanna say to close out the show there, Brett?
Clint Mathis, because I remember back in high school wanting to cut my hair like a mohawk, just like Clint Mathis when I was playing. So that was cool to remember.
I have I got a jersey, the first jersey I got with a name on it, and I got it said, you know, I put Mathis on the back. That was pretty disappointing.
It's the curse. Don't ever get a player's jersey.
Right? Yeah, I had Beltran on the back, and I was pretty nervous for a while about it. So anyway, well, appreciate you guys for listening. I hope everyone enjoyed the interview. I'm Rich. You can get me at @Frisbee_Rich on Twitter.
And I'm Brett. I'm at @A24Brett or also at @Touchline_TBS. And if you guys want to follow Ian, he's at @JoyPaulIan.
That's right. Hornbysports.com to check out that website. They cover, you know, BYU, Utah, RSL, the Jazz. Always stuff going on there. Brett puts a lot more stuff up there than I do, so you can go check it out. That's one. I'm more of a talker than a writer. Anyway, better than against Montreal. Oh, have a good one, guys. Peace out.